Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon, complete with co-pilot Loki Ching and today's guest, Joan Blades. All Coffee Party radio shows are part of our Be the Media project. If you'd like to join our team, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. Be the Media. The intro I put together for the show today talks about how I am a stand for liberty and justice for all and how those two concepts of liberty, the rights of the individual, and justice, the rights of a society, could appear diametrically opposed and how that's that dance between those two concepts that makes things like the Constitution that runs this republic's democracy a very interesting dance. And so the thing that makes that dance possible is, you know, dance partners. The thing that makes that dance possible is interactions with other people. So without further ado, I'm going to first introduce you to my co-pilot and ever-trusted companion, Loki King. Welcome to the show today, Loki.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. How is everyone? Janine, how are you?
I'm great. I'm up here in the big house in Little Woods, and we actually are having a rain break right now. I can see shadows, which is, you know, a wonderful thing in these foggy times we're living in right now in Oregon.
Well, that is true. Luckily, we are not experiencing what they are experiencing up north as of yet. Where Nessie was floating around up in Portland, I saw the other day. So,
yeah. Well, then let's go ahead and introduce our guest for the day. Remember, our topic today is basically we need to talk about why we can't talk about guns. And so we have something of an expert about talking to people on the show with us today. So Joan Blades, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, always a joy. So I'm going to give our listeners a little bit of a background on you, just in case they don't know who you are. Joan is the co-founder of livingroomconversations.org, an open source effort to rebuild respectful civil discourse across ideological, cultural, and party lines while embracing our core shared values. You're a perfect guest for Coffee Party, Joan. She's also a co-founder of MomsRising.org and MoveOn.org. She's a great work cultures champion and co-author of The Custom Fit Workplace, Choose Where and How to Work and Boost Your Bottom Line, winner of a Nautilus Book Award in 2011, and author of The Motherhood Manifesto, which won the Ernest Drinker Ballard Book Prize in 2007. A mediator, which means attorney, by training and inclination. She is a nature lover, artist, and true believer in the power of citizens and our need to build respectful civil discourse while embracing our core shared values. Thank you for being here, Joan.
Well, the coffee party speaks to me, so I'm very glad to be invited on the show.
Well, I know that all these things that you've been doing, the one that I'm most familiar with today is Living Room Conversations, and it's a project aimed at bringing together folks from various perspectives to discuss stuff, things and stuff, very technical terms. I know you have started a series of conversations on guns and responsibility, so I'm wondering what you could share with our listeners about Living Room Conversations in general and about this topic specifically.
Well, Living Room Conversations are an open source project that has created a set of ground rules and a structure that makes it possible for anyone that wants to have a conversation that they're maybe a little anxious about or wants to get a viewpoint that they're not normally exposed to start a conversation, because it's two co-hosts that are friends, each invite two friends, just six people, for a conversation. And everyone's agreed to some really simple guidelines that are basically what we all learned in kindergarten. Be respectful, take turns, be curious, own your part of the conversation. And then the structure of the conversation opens with getting to know each other a little bit and kind of hearing that, you know, we have some shared values. We have some, and once you start seeing that your friend's friends are share more values in, with you than you realize, you often find that you like them. And once you like someone, you hear them very differently. So once you're into the topic area, you're listening differently. And it's a listening practice more than anything else, and closes with people having the opportunity to just appreciate what they heard, what might be different, and with the relationship gained, and sometimes some discoveries of common ground that people didn't realize, and I have had that experience, and it's had some powerful outcomes, there is the opportunity to do much more, because I've become convinced that our divisions are overemphasized in the media and sadly by leadership too often, and that our shared interests tend to get overlooked. And it, when we don't have everybody at the table and we're not getting everyone's best ideas, we're not getting the best outcomes. So that's the basic living room conversation story. So anyone that wants to have one, you can go to the website and there's topic areas, and we've got a bunch of topics that people have already done. You can try one of those, or if there's a topic that someone wants to do that's different than what's up, there's a generic version, and we're always happy to help people customize it if they want help too, because one of the beautiful things about the Living Room Conversation team is we have partners from very different political and cultural perspectives, which allows us to, some of my conservative friends will say, oh, that's a dog whistle. And I'll go, oh, really? Okay. So I'm always learning in this role. So that's Living Room Conversations. And in terms of the guns and responsibility, oh, wow, that's an area where we have this deep cultural divide. And just hearing each other and recognizing our shared desire to have safe communities and have our loved ones. Everybody wants their loved one to come home at night. That's kind of the starting place. And then starting to explore, well, where can we agree? Where are the places where there is opening for making progress? And that's what the guns and responsibility conversation is hoping to open up. And our team, actually, because we are pretty diverse, had our first phone living room conversation this week on guns and responsibility. And it was interesting. I learned things. I always do. It was fun to do it with the team because we already had a good bit of trust between us, and talked about a number of issues where it's kind of dramatic how differently the world looks when you're living in the progressive narrative and the conservative narrative in the area of guns.
Well, I'm really interested in what you had to say about how we listen to each other can be altered. And that's sort of confounded by our differences. You know, that assumes that we actually have a reason to listen to each other, that there is commonality, and how differences seem to make better press. And so they're overemphasized. It's my experience in many issues that the listening's not what's not happening, and you know, if you just tune in to the talkie-talkie TV, for example, you know, you hear a lot more shaming than discussion, more yelling than listening, more righteousness or positionality than problem-solving. And I think you're right. I've not bumped up against anything as where that's as true as it is the whole conversation about violence in America today, and it's, especially because even if you just say violence, it triggers a gun response. Mm-hmm. So then when you get specific to guns, it gets to be even more, you know, less problem-solving oriented, more positional, and as though there, you know, as though this was so taboo it can't be discussed. And I'm really curious on your approach and the successes you feel or the traps that you may have experienced in it.
Well, I think the reality is that guns have been a means of almost manipulating us to feel different and in this country for, you know, a couple decades. And the need right now is first and foremost to form the connection and to start realizing that we don't even share the same facts on a lot of gun issues. The other thing I've become really clear about is the story on the right is that liberals want to take guns away from, you know, good law-abiding gun owners.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, that's not the story that progressives are telling themselves and each other. But that is a deeply held belief by many. And it's kind of the slippery slope argument. And when you have a slippery slope argument, I think the great deal of it is about trust. So it might be that trust is the biggest problem we have in the area of guns and responsibility, and that much would be possible if we, you know, started hearing each other and caring about each other in the way we'd like to. I think we all like to have a community that is not divided in the way it is right now. The vast majority of people would, I'm sure.
Right. Well, I'm divided in a, like you said, when you get into the bowels of logic and reason and, you know, debate or whatever, there's so many red flags in this whole conversation, no matter where it comes from, right? No matter where it comes from. I honestly don't know a single person in the world who thinks all guns should be taken away. I just don't. And
yeah.
And I know a lot of different kind of people, and yet that myth, it's a myth, and it persists. And if anyone says it, it's almost like if anyone says it or anyone repeats it, like I heard someone has said, and then they repeat the myth, then it gives it life. And yet it's such a rallying call, and I don't know. So if any of our listeners out there have questions of Joan, or if they have a contribution to this conversation about the mythology that may keep us from having the meaningful conversations, our number is 646-929-2495, and we'll have Joan for a few more minutes. So especially if you have a question of Joan, now would be the time to call. So thank you for allowing my interruption. But, yeah, what about how does one deal with mythology? Now, this isn't just true in this guns issue. It's true in many issues, and it must come up in other living room conversations.
Oh, yeah. Well, the living room conversations were, you know, conceived of because our media is not helping because we, you know, it has become a vehicle for telling very different stories. So I'm hoping that at some point people will go, I had enough. I'm going to really talk to people that have different viewpoints and find out if this is really the case. On the gun topic, there's a huge difference between urban and rural gun needs and ownership. I lived in Alaska for a year, and guns are integral to, you know, kind of the way you live in many parts of Alaska. It's a culture in which hunting is very common, and it's part of how people support themselves and feed themselves. And I don't think most people have any problem with that.
Right. I think Alaska is a place where if you want to go walking up a stream, you better take a bear rifle. And that's, you know, it's true. But then on the other hand, when you talk about gun violence per capita or gun killings per capita, Alaska is the highest. Now, small population, but still, it's an interesting, everybody really needs a gun. In my neighborhood, I don't walk my dog after dark. I have mountain lions, bobcats, coyotes, mm-hmm. you know, and I live technically in city limits, and so there's no way I could fire a weapon if I wanted to, and so I don't do it. I cannot walk my dog in the forest after dark, and so, you know, we learn to accommodate sort of our relationship with nature in a lot of interesting ways, urban, rural, remote, not so remote. So I am always a little bit shocked by how comparing weapons as a tool of day-to-day life versus weapons as concerned, you know, used the way that is now actually concerning people, they don't even feel the same. They don't feel like mm-hmm. the same story. And yet somehow these stories get commingled in such a way that if, you know, somebody's going to take away my bear rifle so I can't walk along a creek in Alaska, well, that's silly. But it perseveres, and it perseveres for a reason. And I'm what you said earlier is it sounds like there's just no listening. So, Loki, I know that you... Oh, what? You're there?
I thought I lost you for a minute. I had a funny sound on my phone. It's okay.
Okay, excellent. So, Loki, I know that... you have you have your own story about you know, your relationship to growing up in the part of the world where weapons are pretty common. Do you have any questions or comments for Joan?
You know, I want to make sure I'm unmuted for one. I'm just listening, and it's very sad that people are forgetting that a gun, if it's handled responsible and taught through responsibility, a gun is perfectly fine. The problem is basically us as human beings and not being able to distinguish distinguish between right and wrong. We've gotten away from actually communicating with one another, and communication requires listening. We've shut ourselves down through our body language of becoming unapproachable and thinking that just talking to somebody else is communication. That's not necessarily the case. You have to be actively engaged in that. And a lot of the problems we face with the ability to talk about guns and gun responsibilities or whether, you know, they should even be allowed is because of the fear and the inability to problem solve and actually communicate with one another. But we also have seen, or at least I have seen, a unbalance of power. You know, the power structure is unbalanced right now, where it's almost an us versus them type situation instead of us with them working together.
Well, and therein lies the basis of a living room conversation. Yes, John?
Mm-hmm. And if, you know, two people that want to think about this a little more together choose to do so with a couple of friends, then hopefully we can expand the conversation and start sharing with each other. And if we find we have agreements, and I bet we have more than we realize with the conversation I had with my partners at Living Room Conversations. Well, my conservative partners actually had a proposal that made everyone feel safer. Like, yeah, if we did that, I feel better. That would work for me. And for him, it was, you know, it's got to be totally aligned with the Second Amendment. And he had a proposal that was. Now, if we can
start having... I'm totally intrigued. What is his proposal?
Well, it has to do with having a well-regulated militia, and everyone that has a gun is, you know, basically trained so that they can be part of that Second Amendment empowered group. And that would make me feel substantially better. But he needs to describe it, because I've heard about it and I don't want to misrepresent him.
Right. No, but I understand what you're saying. I really think that you said you'll find some places where there's more agreement, but there's also, I've found in my whole experience of trying to talk to people on the radio about things from different perspectives, that often if you actually start listening to other people, you actually start having to express yourself in a way that you can be understood, that you actually sometimes reform the question.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. It's no longer the question you started with, because once you've sort of come to agreement of terms, you realize, well, that's not the issue. And then, you know, what does one do? Well, you start over.
Yeah,
now,
you
wait
can start discovering win-win solutions, as opposed to when you fight about things, you often end with the lose-lose solutions.
Right. Right. I mean, like, one of the articles I read preparing for the show today is called Why Are We Killing Each Other? And What Can We Do to Stop It? And in essence, basically, that article concluded that guns are just a symptom of a greater problem. And so as long as we focus there and not on the greater problem, the solution may not touch us at all. It may not even be possible to reach the solution, which this author describes as fear or disconnect, or as we've already mentioned in this broadcast, the creation of the other. So there's an us and them, which is fearful to people. This is not a comforting belief or stand. This is not a comfortable way to live. And Loki, I heard myself step on you, so please.
Well, I was just, you mentioned that to have a conversation, it has to be respectful and everything else. So you're telling me, for me to be able to communicate with somebody, whether it be with you, Joan, or anybody else, our listeners, I have to let go of my ego? You mean I have to step back and become human again? What's up with that? I'm confused.
Excellent point, and one that we should probably all ask ourselves more often than we do.
But our egos aren't disrespectful, are they?
Well, maybe. But I do think that seeing the world is bigger than my personal experience is sometimes a challenge. You know, and the older I get, especially, you know, I mean, you all know that I'm in my 60s, right? I'm in my mid-60s. And so I've got a lot of time under my belt. And that, so sometimes I have to resist the urge to sort of codify reality. Because when I do that, it sort of, you know, it gets stuck in the 60s or it gets stuck in the 80s or, you know. And it's a big, that muscle of looking newly, or being willing to recognize when the environment has actually changed. Exercising that muscle is something that, you know, we kind of go to the, my gymnasium of choice is social media, but, you know, there are lots of different ways in which people can exercise that ability that sometimes doesn't feel like a day-to-day necessity, but really I've come to appreciate it as something that I have to do every day.
Mm-hmm.
I know that your time is short, Joan, so and I appreciate you spending some of it with us, but if you were to sort of send us forth into this conversation with both what you've learned so far and what you hope for in terms of an outcome for both the conversation about guns or anything that seems to polarize us, what's your message for us?
I think the message is that it's actually really fun to be talking to people that you normally don't talk to on topics that you care about, and that it opens up new ideas and creativity. So though some people might be a little anxious at the onset, the outcome is extremely satisfying and opens up new possibilities in a way that I think a lot of people are very ready for. So I hope some of the Coffee Party members have a fun time doing this, and that we can then collect the good ideas and share them further so that, you know, whatever the topic, we can start looking at what are the win-win solutions that are going to make us all feel like we can start working together on even bigger issues.
I could not agree more. I really believe that every little win-win sort of makes it, it kind of ups the belief factor.
Mm-hmm.
So sharing those wins, I think, is brilliant. And I'm looking forward to Living Your Being conversations, sharing some of the wins from this whole conversation on gun responsibility. So thank you so much for your time. We've appreciated having you here. And come back again soon.
I would love to do that. Thank you for having me, and have a wonderful afternoon.
Thanks. Take
care.
Joan.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Loki, what an amazing conversation.
You know, it is. And the one thing that I always have to come back to is we have gotten so far away from knowing the actual definition of what a true conversation or communicating is. And that is an active participation where a lot of what we see nowadays, people are just talking, which means I'm going to get my point out and you don't matter. For any relationship, whether it be in the business world, whether it be just a normal family or friendship that you have, or even an intimate relationship, there's three key things that always need to be in place for anything to happen. And that is communication, which means expressing your opinions, your thoughts, your beliefs, but the willingness to listen and take in the viewpoints and see how they apply to them, apply to you. The other piece of it is you need to be able to validate the other person and their value that they have. Now, that goes on any topic, whether it is respect and responsibilities over the gun issue, whether it's respect and responsibilities over the U.S. Constitution, whatever the case may be. The last thing is you need to be able to appreciate and learn from the other person and appreciate them as a person. You know, we had a conversation yesterday where we kind of preluded into this program that we're going to discuss later on in the show, that we all walked in there. We came from differing opinions, differing lifestyles, and everything else. But we all walked in ahead of time. We didn't have our guard up. We used body language and the inflection in our tones and everything else that we were able to disagree and agree and not tear anybody down, but maybe offer a differing viewpoint. The biggest thing we have going on right now, in my personal opinion, is we live in a society where we have an unbalanced power structure, where it, like I say, it's us versus them or whatever else. And until we can get back to a balanced point, which means the older generation actually teaching the younger generation, but the younger generation has to be willing to accept it and learn. Unfortunately, the way things are set up, I'm not sure we're at that point anymore.
Well, you know, it is interesting that you say that because, you know, especially when issues kind of reach out and touch the Constitution. I mean, obviously there's more than a constitutional conversation going on about guns, but it's a part of it. So when you think of the Constitution, you, of course, think of our elected. You think of what's going on in Washington, D.C. And in the last 15 years, we've seen a great, Congress, that the Senate, the House, they used to be the epitome of decorum, right? People could argue with each other vehemently and still call each other the gentleman from wherever, you know, or the lady from California, whatever it was. I mean, there was a standard of interaction that was not inherently alienating. So even if you didn't like what they were talking about, it made clear that you separated that person from that opinion. You know, that person is more than that single opinion. And in the last 15 years, that's just gone away. And I think that it's a terrible example for the American public to see their elected acting like the sharks and the jets, you know, from West Side Story.
You know, it is pretty sad that I have the philosophy in my life is the fact that you may not like me, and that's okay, but you will respect me. And, you know, part of this going back to the gun and gun responsibility issue, and with this unbalanced power, a perfect example of it, and I'm going to show my age a little bit here, is back in 79, there was the bank robbery that happened down in California, where the bank robbers actually had all the automatic weapons, and the law enforcement showed up. They were undergunned to handle the situation. So how they resolved it is they actually went to the local sporting goods store and said, we're going to buy enough guns to equal out this power situation so we can resolve the issue. So law enforcement at that point learned, okay, we have to be able to equally protect ourselves against the citizen. But now I've seen the pendulum swing the other direction, where unfortunately our law enforcement and government is outpowering us on not only the gun issue, but several issues where I personally don't think that law enforcement needs military-grade, you know, vehicles, military-grade weapons to be able to handle a search warrant or a argument or whatever that they're actually responding to. And I think that's part of the problem is we live in a society now that the media spins it in such a way that we're living in fear. So people are amping up to handle that fear. Now, I disagree with one point that you made here early on, and a point that was actually made yesterday on yesterday's show. Guns are not a symptom to the problem. The gun by itself is a piece of metal with gears and everything else. Until it's picked up and actually used, it's nothing. In my personal opinion, the symptom to the problem is the media, mainstream media, not us, but mainstream media, that spins a story the way they're told to spin it. The disease that we have going on in our country and the inability to communicate with one another is the corruption. The ultimate saying, if you go back and look at it, the ultimate saying is absolute power creates absolute corruption. And that is so much, you know, so much true.
Well, and for all our listeners, our weekly Loki rant brought to you by Coffee Party Be the Media. No, I think you hit on several really good points there. I tried to write them down as they went by, but you know, it's obvious that the militarization of law enforcement hasn't panned out terribly well. And whatever kind of a social experiment that has been, it doesn't look so good from here. And that might be a conversation all unto itself. I, too, recall the days when only criminals had assault weapons, right? Law enforcement even didn't. Well, that was quickly rectified, as you just pointed out. The bigger concern, like you said, the pendulum swings. There was a ban on not the law enforcement use of, but the private citizen use of these weapons, you know, ownership and use of these weapons, that President Bush, the latter, lifted. What was it, about 2004, somewhere? And they're a big hit, and they're a big marketing success. They're a huge financial cash cow to a few companies. And so when you talk about corruption, I realize that that's sort of a ubiquitous term, and that, you know, each one of us, when we hear the term corruption, we think of something, right? And we may not all think of the same thing. But I do worry that the conversation that we have today is, if you connect the dots and follow the money, it goes back to who's making money from this conversation. This is Janine, the business person, talking. Who's making money on this conversation? And how do they keep that market open? Like, the corruption I see is our, you know, when money became speech and corporations became people, and that was a huge rainmaker, right, for industry and business. That was like opened the floodgates for influence. Say, I mean, for business to have more to say about what our elected do than voters have to say about what our elected do. And that's just creepy to me. And so many of these conversations of creating the other have escalated. Some have been literally created, and others have escalated since mm-hmm. the Citizens United ruling, of downstream McCutcheon, other points where money trumps votes. And I'm sure, Loki, that you have seen that it's a well-established, come from many sources, fact that the best investment a company can make in America today is a lobbyist, that they get a $278 return on every dollar spent. And,
exactly.
And that's like, right, it's like a 2,000,000%, you know, a 200,000% return on their investment. You know, it's just unheard of. And so, for me, this whole corruption concern that you and I share, but, you know, may share about a dozen different topics is really sourced by our insecurity with our elected following the will of the people as opposed to following the will of campaign contributors. And
True.
And the same guys who contribute that money own the media outlets that keep this conversation away from being productive.
And, you know, I'm just going to back you up here just a second. I'm going to go in reverse. So I'm switching gears. I'm real good at that. You talked about Bush Jr. or George W. lifting the ban on assault weapons. Now, do I agree with that? Probably not. There is no reason that a citizen should need that. However, it also states in the Constitution that no citizen and no law enforcement should have more or less than the other to keep the balance of safety and everything else. So it's not correct for law enforcement to have military grade or assault weapons when we cannot have them to protect ourselves from them. Now, I grew up around guns, like Janine mentioned earlier. I grew up in a small little town, and yes, it was a small little town where we lived out in the country. So we did have, you know, guns around us, not only for protection, because any form of emergency protection from 911 was so far away that we needed it to at least defuse the situation, and also to take care of feeding our family. But we were taught the responsibilities and how to respect the gun as a tool. And we were taught that a gun was never to be used to resolve a problem, because if you had to resort to that, you weren't any good. We all have the ability within ourselves as human beings to go back to the fight or flight situation, to be a predator. It's how we handle that situation. Now, a gun to me is a tool, and I grew up that, yeah, there was a gun hanging around or a rifle hanging above the mantle, and I think you mentioned this yesterday, Janine, as well, that your family also had that. But it was known, it was taught, it was whatever. You do not touch that gun or rifle or whatever unless you had a reason. I was also taught that a lot of the times when I was carrying around my pistol, it was open, people saw it, and that was enough of a deterrent to stop any situation from escalating any farther. And if it came to the point that I felt endangered and I had to unholster the weapon, it was also understood that I had to have the willingness to use that weapon. Whether I did or not didn't matter, but the willingness had to be there. If I wasn't willing to use it, there was no reason to own the gun. Now, you know, my uncle being a canine officer, he has told me many a story of the people that he's come in contact with that are robbing houses or whatever else, that if they would have known that there was a loaded weapon inside the house, whether it was used or not, they would have never entered that residence, because our instincts and our ability to want to live and to exist is much stronger than taking a risk to have all that taken away for just a few trinkets. I also got into a conversation the other day, or not too long ago, with another member of the Coffee Party radio team, as well as Living Room Conversations, where we got onto this personal conversation of gun rights and gun responsibilities, where this individual said, you know, if I was to be going into a coffee shop and I saw somebody in there that was openly carrying a pistol, I would not enter that store. Where my philosophy and my upbringing was, I'd enter the store because I can see the gun on the side and I know the intentions of what that person's going to do. So I would feel much safer walking in there knowing, okay, I'm at least covered if something does go down. And the people the people that hide and that have the criminal mentality that want to do wrong, you're not going to know whether they're carrying it or not. So.
Right. And by the time you see it, it's like it's almost too late. But, you know, I have to say, you know, okay, I have three homes and until recently. You know, one is in Oregon, one is in Las Vegas, and one of them on the Big Island of Hawaii. Oregon and Nevada both have open carry law, right? And living here in Oregon, I almost never see a weapon. Almost never. You know, every now and then there's guys marching around in front of the Capitol building, you know, going trying to prove that they can do that. Like, everybody knows they can do that. And, you know, but virtually you never see one. Virtually you just don't. Because the kind of sensibility that you're talking about, the whole sensibility of responsible gun ownership, is something that I think culturally exists in the Pacific Northwest. And I, too, grew up in a home with weapons. I, too, grew up in a community of people who not only were hunters, but were also at times having to defend themselves from wildlife. And so I totally get it. But we all have to, well, let me go back to my story about where you see open guns. But when I go to Nevada, though, there's this thing. It's a different culture. And I will tell you that if I walk into a Nevada Starbucks and there's a guy with a gun, I walk out. All rhinestone cowboy baloney. You know what I'm saying? And those aren't the guys that I'm comfortable with. Now, let me come back to my childhood. Growing up in a community where everybody had weapons, everybody, right? We also knew that there were some people that we avoided because they weren't very responsible with those weapons. They'd have loaded things laying around even though there was children in the house. They'd flash those things like they were a new pair of sneakers. You know what I mean? I was very uncomfortable. There were homes that I was not allowed to go to because of the cavalier attitude of those people, their parents, you know, as a kid, obviously. But their parents had a very cavalier attitude about weapons. They were not responsible gun owners. Likewise, as I shared before, everybody knew somebody whose little brother killed his little sister because he found a loaded gun. You know, little kids were talking. Everybody knew somebody who was killed or injured in a hunting accident. Everybody knew somebody who'd either done a murder-suicide or, you know what I'm saying? And so we knew, because guns were a part of the fabric of life, that it was totally possible for there to be people out there that shouldn't have them. I keep looking to responsible gun owners, like you apparently are, and if I had a gun today, which I do not, for reasons we could discuss a whole other time. But responsible gun owners need to step up, acknowledge that this is a tool that can be used or abused, and then look to the common conversation and say, what is it we can do that will make all of this comfortable, right? Because right now, there's a lot of discomfort.
I think part of that is right now we as a society are in a fight or flight situation where we're fighting to put money on put food on the table and, you know, pay our bills and everything else. We're being oppressed in such a way that it's almost like we're being backed into a corner that we're going to have to do something. And it does not help the fact that, you know, Hollywood movies and even video games are almost, in a sense, promoting a violent situation. And that's where everybody seems to be drawn to because of our animalistic nature by trait. That's what we need to start curbing and getting away from of, you know, if you have an issue, there are other means of solving the issue. You know, communication. Go back to the old days of, you know, fisticuffs or whatever you have to do. Use, be responsible. And it's up to us as the older generation to actually start instilling that back into the younger generation of, yes, communication is important, and it's more than just do you want fries with that, but also respect for another individual, being able to discipline them so that they understand there is responsibilities that you must have, that you are required to have, and if you act inappropriately, there's going to be consequences. But we also have the problem of the whole mental status issue, and you mentioned it earlier. Should certain people not have guns? Probably so. But we have this unbalance of power again, where you have individuals that recognize they have a situation going on in their life that they're depressed or whatever else. They're wanting help, but they're being roadblocked because you can't afford to pay me the $100 an hour that I require to sit down and talk with you about this. Or you have the ones out there, the doctors that are being paid by the pharmaceutical, big pharmaceutical, to push drugs that they're either being under-medicated to deal with the situation or they're being over-medicated and it's causing side effects and everything else. So we actually, this whole issue of gun bans, gun responsibilities, and everything else, in my own personal opinion, it shouldn't be an issue. We need to be dealing with the, because the gun can, like I say, do nothing except sit there until we pick it up. We need to be dealing with the other symptoms of mainstream media not being able to teach discipline, get away from promoting violence, and deal with the corruption of our government in a responsible way before we can even really discuss this issue.
Well, there you go. We're connecting the dots back to corruption. And so, of course, my mind always goes to, you know, the economics of healthcare. You talked about folks, you know, needing help that aren't getting help. We know in Oregon, for example, that people forget about the Thurston school shooting back in the late 90s, you know, but that was a child who needed help, and he was not getting the help that he needed. There was, of course, there was a recent shooting at Umpqua Community College, same thing. A young man needed help, wasn't getting help. In my experience, there's no weapon in my home because my son came home from his second tour in Iraq. Stop loss, by the way. He wasn't supposed to be in the Army anymore with pretty severe PTSD. And this had to be a gun-free home for my son to make it through that period of time. And so there's all kinds of reasons. But then, again, we look to our elected to help us know what it is we need to know to do what it is we need to do. And I, you know, in my heart of hearts, I do not understand why federal money cannot be used to study this phenomena of gun violence, gun injury, you know what I'm saying? We're not allowed to even study the question that National Institutes of Health can't study it, the CDC can't study it. And yet, if not from facts, like you and I can talk about our personal experience with the mentally ill being involved, but until there are facts that really point to that, it's all a matter, it keeps a gossip, rumor, dog whistle, code word status. And it denies that thing. I talk about this all the time, but I believe in American ingenuity. And American ingenuity only occurs when people with different points of view come together, make a failure is not an option decision, and then do what it takes to find a resolution to the question that they've defined. And it's happened time and time again throughout history, but it's not happening now because you can't even get people who don't agree with each other before they show to be at the same table. That is un-American. That is un-American, and it goes back to the kind of corruption, I believe, that you're talking about, which is basically our elected pay more attention to their funders than to their voters. Mm-hmm. And those same people that fund our elected campaigns are the ones who control the media outlets and somehow make the case for whatever it is that serves their economic need more than, it's not even a socioeconomic need. It is an economic need. And so we've been reduced to cash vectors for these people. Our government has been reduced to a marketing tool. And this just breaks my heart, you know. And so I hope that a lot of this energy that we feel across the country that's offended by corruption will look to the source of the corruption, in my personal opinion and the opinion of many, that the source of that corruption does not lie with any individual. It lies within interpretations of the Constitution that make corporations, people, and money speech. And as soon as you take that away, as soon as you level that playing field, things can change. End of rant.
Well, and if you look at it, it's sad that we've been a country or a nation for 239 years or so. We have actually been in constant warfare for 211 of those years. The last actual war that we actually fought that was declared a war was World War II. But if you look at it, we've had all these military actions, Vietnam and what we've got going on now. In my personal opinion, if you look at the stats and how many countries are actually involved in this new police action or military action we got going on now, we're actually in a world war. The only thing that hasn't made it to be a world war is the fact of a little piece of paper being signed declaring actual war. The United States actually spends more money on warfare right now than 26 of their allies combined. We've spent more money on that. And, you know, I'm disappointed in our current president because before he was elected, he said, I'm going to pull the troops back. We are in situations that we do not need to be, yet we're still in them. And we have a lot of our young men and women out there that have said, yes, I will give my life to fight for the freedoms and liberties of my own country, that are going, what are we doing? We don't even belong here. Why are we even here? We need to take our country back.
Well, and I assert in agreement with you that the legacy of war that you're talking about right now has almost nothing to do with who's in the White House. It has, whether or not that person did everything they could to change the tide is one thing, right? That's an opinion you get to have about that office holder. But the truth is the legacy is an economic one. It is a business legacy. And the business of war is good. And it went all the way back to that last legitimate war when then-exiting President Eisenhower said, beware the military-industrial complex. And he said that because up until that point, profiteering from war had been illegal. You couldn't do it, right? And now it's nothing but profit, you know. It's nothing but profit. And it's all, you know, follow the money. Just follow the money. you know. The Citizens United decision became very important to the money when the American taste for war had run out. And so it's just like, what's the next strategy? What's the next strategy? You and I might have a strategy to get through this day, or our families might have a strategy to get through this month, or when we look at our children, we might have a strategy to get them to college, you know what I'm saying? The big money has a strategy for generations. We cannot underestimate this, and we have every bit of evidence we need. And what I assert is exactly what you said earlier, that we don't connect the dots, because every tool in the book is being used to keep those dots from being connected. When the same people that benefit from war are the ones that own the news media, are the ones that control what goes over the, you know, the airwaves, and who are now invading social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is the enemy. So when we get upset about guns, let's go undo Citizens United. When we get upset about, just name something else, right? Go after Citizens United. There's where the Constitution needs to change. If I was going to change something, the Second Amendment might be on my list to modify, right? But the whole thing that allows for money in politics, the anything that says corporations are people, or that money is speech, there's the constitutional amendment that needs to happen today, so that any other is any other as possible. We can't talk today because we're talking through the filter of cash.
Well, in a lot of aspects, our government needs to get out of a lot of areas. I mean, it goes beyond just what we can and cannot have. They, you know, the schools are now teaching what morality is, teaching that you have to respect authority and you cannot question. The school system, in my personal opinion, should not be teaching that. They need to be teaching the basics of life, you know, arithmetic, how to read, how to write, teach actual true history. They should not be teaching my kid, even though I'm single, but they should not be teaching anybody's kid that you cannot question authority, or this is how our society deals with sexuality and everything else. That's not the school's responsibility. It's not the school's responsibility or the government's responsibility to dictate to me how I can teach or discipline my child. That should be up to me. Now, what I teach them...
You don't want those Texas textbooks, huh? You don't want those Texas textbooks that reinvent history and impose some particular little chunk of Christianity.
I will fall back on what my professor, psychology professor, taught me. The first day I walked into his class, he said, "You know those shiny things you have on your desks that are got material on it that we're supposed to be learning from?" He says, "Take them back and get your money back, because most textbooks are written by idiots that don't know what they're talking about and don't know real life." So take it for what it is.
Right. I think that it's always been true in print media, and I think people are figuring out about social media is that, you know, just because it's out there doesn't make it so. And, yeah. And as a matter of fact, it's making it more and more difficult to do research. You know, I mean, I've certainly picked up volumes in the Reserve Book Room, and I can't confirm this anywhere. But, you know,
right.
I think that what Joan started and what you and I have finished is an excellent sort of peek at the fact that no matter how we spin, no matter how much we want to, formulate our own opinions, in the end, it's going to be our ability to connect with other people and work through the mythology, identify what's really so for ourselves, for one another, before these common issues can be resolved. And listening is a big part of that. Speaking clearly, sophisticating your own perspective is a part of that. And actually believing in that magical thing, American ingenuity, American know-how, whatever you want to call it, that says that we are actually able to solve problems when we come together, regardless of whether or not we enter the room in agreement, is the way forward for us. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we need to get back, like I say, handle the situations, handle everybody. If you communicate, if you appreciate it, if you validate, and go in with an open mind. You know, I find myself a lot of the times when I'm out walking around the community that I'm living in, whether it be shopping or whatever else, I have quite a few people that will actually come up to me and ask questions. And it doesn't have to be important questions, but they will ask or they're intrigued or whatever else, because I present myself as somebody that you can approach, you can do that with. I mean, I walked into a store the other day to buy something, and I started walking up to a certain cash register, and here is the cashier standing behind the register, and she's not smiling. She's got her arms crossed. She's got this don't bother me look. So what did I do? I turned around and went and found another cashier that actually wanted to pay attention to me and wanted to make my experience a positive one. We need to get back to that where we show respect. I personally, you know, a lot of people are taken aback by retirement homes or retirement communities. I actually love going to those places because, you know, when I sit down and talk to my elders that I was taught to respect and get the history, get their stories and everything else, we have fallen so far back that it's not even funny. And, you know, it's conversations like this. It's putting out the facts, and it's hopefully making people think that we actually have some serious issues and problems that we need to fix, or we're going to be in terrible trouble, and we're not leaving a good legacy for those that are going to follow us.
Well, and that's an excellent segue into reminding people the other shows that are available where these kinds of conversations go on. Coffee Party Internet Radio has a week-long lineup every week on Sundays. Bobby Rodrigo hosts I Take Liberty with My Coffee. On Mondays, you can hear the Kim Danahay Show. Tuesdays, you can hear A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America. And Loki's behind the scenes on that one, as well as this one. On Thursdays, we've got a team. So twice a month, they'll hear Debbie Lynn Molyneux and a living room conversation. Once a month, you're going to hear Mark Gilbert and the Conscious Bridge. And then once a month, at least for the rest of the year, you'll hear Lunch with Loudon with Janine and Loki. On Friday, you can listen to A Cup of Joe with Joe Gumbreen and Shona Banda. And on Saturday, Egberto Willis and Politics Done Right. So it's been great talking to you all. Remember that all of these shows can be listened to live or streamed, and I'm about ready to head for lunch and my next cup of coffee. How about you, Loki?
I'm all for that. The thunder and lightning are going on outside of my office here, so I'm going to go grab a cup of coffee and sit out on the front porch and watch a good fireworks show for once.
And I say coffee party on.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down.